And welcome into the Forum on the Hill, and we are continuing with yet another hour of great conversations with some terrific people. Aaron Keck here with you live in 97.9 The Hill Studios. Good to be with you as always. This hour, we are focusing on health and wellness. We are joined today by three very special guests. We've got Brian Toomey, who's the president of Piedmont Health, joining us for this half hour. Brian, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We've got Janet Hadar, who is the president of UNC Hospitals. Janet, thank you so much.
Good to be here.
And Raul Daniels is the chief operating officer for UNC Health. Raul, thank you so much for being with us today as well.
Really appreciative of the opportunity.
And UNC Health is one of the sponsors of this event, as you just heard from the intro. So I thank both of you especially for being here and for helping to make this entire forum possible, not just this hour, but for the entire week. So let's jump right into it. It's 2020. COVID-19 has dominated the news, and it's certainly dominated all of your lives as well. We're in mid-December. What is the state of things right now? Janet, we'll start with you. What are you experiencing?
I can speak to UNC Hospitals. And like the rest of the state, we're starting to see the number of COVID cases increase. The medical center here in Chapel Hill has about 50 patients today. And many of the patients that we see are transfers from around the state when community hospitals are stretched in the acuity of care that's necessary is a bit higher than what they can provide. They typically send their patients to us. So the acuity of COVID patients that we see is a bit higher than in the community. But we're managing. We've got sufficient PPE. We've got adequate testing. We've got adequate beds. I think the biggest challenge right now is just keeping our workforce well and having adequate staff to meet the rising needs for care.
Yeah, Raul?
Yeah, right now we are full on with our PPE. We've got the adequate staffing like Janet was mentioning. What I hope we have a chance to speak to is that we're excited about getting vaccines very soon at UNC Hospitals. In fact, as early as next week, we hope to begin administering vaccines to our providers and our staff that are exposed to COVID positive patients. So really excited about that right around the corner.
Do you know who's getting it first? Like who's going to be literally first in line?
Yeah, the state has asked us to identify individuals that would fall into the first category defined by the federal government. And so we've turned those names in already to the state. And those employees will start getting notified very soon about their eligibility. And once we receive the vaccines in, hopefully either this weekend or early next week, and those individuals are notified, we will start providing those vaccines to them.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. The UK's first person was a guy named William Shakespeare. We've got to top that in Chapel Hill in some way.
I don't know if we'll top that one.
Is there a Michael Jordan who works for the hospital? We can do that. With the case numbers trending as they are and with hospitalization numbers trending as they are, it's still continuing to go up. So, Jenny, you mentioned that we do have enough available beds in Chapel Hill right now at UNC Hospitals. How, with current trends as they are, how long do you anticipate that continuing to be the case?
You know, we evaluate it daily. We really do. We've got tremendous dashboards that every morning when we come in, we take a look at the status of all the requirements to keep the operations running safely. And we have a lot of contingency plans that we've gone over and over and refined. And so we know how to manage this. We're in a good position.
Brian Toomey, Piedmont Health, what's your experience been?
So just like everybody here, that the for us, the staff issue is the real big one for us now. Staff being exposed and the requirements for quarantine and waiting to get test results really puts a tremendous stress on everybody. And the other piece that's really, and it's just on top of everybody's stressor, which is most people now, they're just, they're overwrought with their own emotions, their own experience, and any little change just, there's no more room in that emotional sponge for anything to soak up. That's really the challenge, and keeping everybody on top during this time is, that's the hard part.
Yeah,
very
that was going to be my next question. How, like, over and above just the health concerns and the need for PPE and quarantining and being exposed and things like that, just mentally, psychologically, how is the staff holding up?
So for us, it's the two words of it depends, right? So mm-hmm. it depends on the person, depends on the day. And there are times that people just want to let it go, and we see people lose, you know, be different than they normally are. We're giving a lot of COVID space, if you will, for people acting differently than who they are. But for the most part, everybody's really trying to work together. We see it as kind of a relay. So if you're overwhelmed today, just pass the baton to somebody else to take care of that. And so long as we do that together, we'll be okay. For us, our lessons are pretty much what we've knew before this, and we all do, is when we all work together with facts, we're in a much superior position than mm-hmm. if we only work together with, you know, denial and not facts.
Yeah. Janet Rowley, you're both nodding through that.
Similar for us. Back early March of this year, there was a lot of adrenaline. Everybody was in it. We can do this together. It's turned out to be a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very proud of the number of resilience programs and other offerings that we're providing to our staff for well-being, and really a lot of different outlets for individuals to seek out help, seek out care, seek out support, mm-hmm. To make sure that we are really being mindful of how stressful this is, not only at work, but at home as well. And there's no escaping it. And so our HR department, our Department of Psychiatry, which we're very fortunate to have, be a part of our organization, the School of Medicine, our providers have all been really wonderful at helping us think through how do we provide for well-being services for our staff.
I think the point you made about the sprint versus a marathon is a really important one to keep in mind, because UNC Hospitals and UNC Health, like the folks who work there, are really on the absolute front lines. And marathons are difficult enough as it is, and they get exponentially harder when you start out thinking it's a sprint, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And they're coming to work every day, mm-hmm. and you know, many of them have spouses who've lost jobs. They are caring for patients who are quite ill, and they're short-staffed, and they're also, many of them have small children at home, and so they're trying to manage, you know, teleschooling. And so, you know, all of that together, anyone even with tremendous resilience, is hard. It's really hard. And I think our organization we've acknowledged it, and really proud of the resources that we've put together, and people are using them, and that's great.
Mm. What's been the biggest challenge? I think when people think about the biggest challenges facing the healthcare system with COVID-19, they might go to some of the more obvious ones that we think about in the news: case numbers, more people coming into the hospital, the emergency department, and things like that. Beyond that, what are the real challenges that you're facing?
I'll take that one, and it's top of mind. I think about it every day. It's the workforce. Our mm-hmm. greatest asset in healthcare is our people. And to see them suffer day in and day out, and there's only so much we can do to make this better, right? And so I find that to be the most challenging.
Yeah. Brian?
Staying the course during the tough times. So, the old adages seem to make more sense every day. So, chain is as strong as its weakest link. So, when one person just kind of like goes off and does something knucklehead style, it affects everybody. And so, but we all have to just be in this together and do those things. So the adage for us, the thing that we pay attention to, is we believe that whatever you were before COVID, whether as a person, a family, or an organization, you're just more of it now. So if you were prepared and caring and committed, you're more prepared, more caring, more committed. If you weren't so strong before, you're less strong now. One thing that we do know also that's worked is, because we're in a community, I think people take for granted the partnerships that exist between health departments, hospitals, community health centers, and this part where almost everybody I talk to, it starts with, how are you doing, in a serious way, as opposed to just an offhand way. That's probably the base for how we all are successful here.
Mm-hmm. I've switched to, how are you holding up?
There you go.
I don't know when that happened, but it happened sometime in the last couple of months. I think it's important to check in a meaningful way, right? That's so important.
And the one thing that's happened is people actually answer that question more honestly.
Yeah.
It used to be, oh, I'm great, would be when someone say, how you doing? Now people are actually more honest with where they are and how they're feeling.
Yeah. Raul, same question for you.
Yeah, I'd key off of what Brian said. You know, teamwork makes the dream work, mm-hmm. and our community partnerships with Piedmont, the Orange County Health Department, Our partnerships with the School of Medicine, they're wonderful, wonderful relationships. And the thing that I think that I've been most appreciative of is not only the partnerships, but the creativity that has come from those partnerships. And we've achieved a lot. We've accomplished so much for patient care. And I'll just go quickly back to initially as the disease was spreading, and tests didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, we were very fortunate to have Melissa Miller and her team, microbiology team at UNC Hospitals, to develop one of the first COVID tests in the state. And now our hospitals, I think, provided close to 160,000, 170,000 tests at this point. That's the type of creativity that's needed right now to solve big problems.
Absolutely.
And overcome those barriers. So
yeah, and you know, think about the talent across the entire campus, really, the university campus. We had the School of Dentistry helping us reprocess masks. I never even knew that was a thing until they shared the technology with us. And then we had other chemists testing to ensure the filtration rate on those reprocessed masks. I mean, we partnered so well with many across the campus and the local community. The collaboration's been terrific.
What's been the thing that's helped you most?
You know, Ral and I do employee forums. It's an opportunity to meet with frontline workers and really just talk about whatever's on their mind. And we had one this afternoon. And I say to them, because I can tell they're fatigued, we have the luxury of the 30,000-foot view. And, you know, yeah. When I look at all of the activity going on and the tremendous collaboration and really dedication, and UNC Hospitals and the Medical Center as a whole is really mission-minded. It's hard to describe the environment there, but everybody has stood behind the mission. And it's moving, and I'm incredibly proud of that.
Brian, you were nodding through that.
Yes, it's actually right on target for our experience. So the couple things we've learned and are important. I think we've all learned how expressive our eyes are. So because that's the main part
correct.
That we're seeing, and we didn't realize how expressive they were. And the other piece that we see is again the challenge is when you see the fatigue, what to do about it. But we are responding to it, and I think we can feel proud of what that is. And now, the one thing that's come back that's got everybody excited is the worst death besides a person is the death of hope. And when you talk about a vaccine, the idea of what that hope does for everybody just gets out. There's an end. And the reality here is that people don't think, oh, there's a miracle end. There's an end. We can do that piece.
Yeah.
The one thing that also I think that everybody here, UNC certainly, it's very important for everybody to not just get information, but get information from a trusted source that knows what they're talking about, because it does change and evolve. Listen to the people who know what they're talking about, and when you do, you'll be better.
Yeah, and to think about the sources that you're trusting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a couple.
A lot of people
are
getting their information from sources they trust, but yeah.
Go to the places that are the experts, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, UNC is an expert in this piece. We know what we're doing with community health. Go to the places that are expert and watch those things. And there's so much to do. Let them interpret the information for you. Don't try to do it yourself. That's why they're paid professionals, and we're paid professionals.
What can we do, and what can you do, and what are you doing to try to counter the vast amount of misinformation that's out there about COVID, about the vaccine, and just about health and healthcare and wellness in general?
I'll say internally, we're very fortunate to have a wealth of resources through our infectious diseases department, our epidemiology department, and others that are actively involved in the ongoing studies and research around COVID-19. And so we try to identify ways that we can share that information back out to our staff through presentations and other shared information. The other piece is just really making sure that our staff have the time to learn about the information. So this evening at 5:30, we're having a system-wide COVID vaccine discussion for the UNC health system. Next Monday, Janet is hosting a UNC Medical Center specific vaccine discussion so that we can get all 14,000 of our employees educated, to Brian's point, on the important information that is true and that is accurate, to try to dispel any questions or myths that might be out there.
And we've been holding since the beginning of the pandemic, every Thursday evening, informational sessions. They're 30 minutes for providers across the state if they want to tune in and hear from our researchers, our operational leaders, about all the things that we're putting in place. So we've really been deliberate about sharing this information as much as possible.
Well, we're speaking with Brian Toomey, Janet Hadar, Raul Daniels, talking about health and wellness from the perspective of some of the major healthcare organizations in our community, UNC Hospitals, UNC Health, Piedmont Health, and you brought up the vaccine. So let's talk about the vaccine, because it's just around the corner, not literally just around the corner, because the corner is a euphemism, but very, very close to arriving. What should people know right now about it?
Yeah, you know, the early responses that have come out show that there's a 90%+ effective rate for these vaccines. They are unique in that they have to be maintained at a very cold temperature. And so there's a lot of unique handling procedures that we've got to go through as healthcare providers to ensure the stability of the vaccines before they're administered. These vaccines also require a lot of documentation that's provided back to the state and the federal government. So as healthcare providers, we're going to approach this from a little bit different venue that we might normally. We're all used to getting flu vaccines right now, and that process works for us. We provide flu vaccines to our 14,000 employees every year, and it just works like clockwork. This is going to be a little bit different because of the handling and other types of things and other documentation requirements. And as Brian mentioned, there is some concern and confusion out there in the community as well. And so we're not requiring our staff to take the vaccines, but we're highly encouraging them to take those vaccines.
Mm-hmm. Janet?
Yeah, and I think another challenge, we're actively setting up, we'll be vaccinating our employees out of the medical center and also out of Hillsboro. In the order by which individuals get it is really, again, set by the state. They've following the CDC guidance of who's in Category 1A, and we have all the names submitted and ready to go. But we will find out week by week how much supply we're getting. So it makes a bit challenge trying to plan this and explaining the process to the workforce. But, you know, we've already proven to one another that we can work through ambiguity, and we will do it again.
Yeah. Brian?
Yeah, so this is, in lots of ways, the vaccine is like PPE at the beginning of this. There's not enough. And then, but the difference is we're not deciding as providers who's getting these first courses. It's being prescribed to us. And so that's going to be a little bit confusing for everybody because, as you said, well, who's going to get it and how? You know, a week away from giving a vaccine out, it's not so clear. To Janet Rowell's point of view, that's where you want to make sure you have people know what they're doing, because with this ambiguity, you want to have people who can really manage that ambiguity in a way that it's going to work. But it's a 3-month plan for us. That's what we keep thinking about. Where we're going to, or actually 4 months, where we're going to be in March with vaccines for everybody. And we all need to start thinking about, what am I going to get by March?
UNC Hospitals will be an open site. And what an open site means is not only will we vaccinate our workforce, but we'll also vaccinate the community. And so we've got two divisions of work underway right now, and we'll be ready to start on Monday morning. Should they show up over the weekend, we will start on Monday morning.
Yeah. What do you know about the supply right now in the process of getting it? Because we've had news about the Pfizer vaccine, but there's also the Moderna vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine. Mm-hmm. How do you juggle all of that?
Yeah, initially we're going to receive the Pfizer vaccine, and that the review, FDA review for Moderna is, I think, a week behind the Pfizer review. So within a week, we'll probably hear if we're going to also be receiving the Moderna vaccine as well. But you'd be wonderfully impressed with all of the hours and hours of work that's going into the logistics, the timing, the security, all those types of things around distributing these medications. And there's a booster dose that goes with these vaccines as well. It's not just one and done, that you have to keep track of everybody who's received it so that they get the second dose as well. So it is highly complicated and unusual, but we're well prepared, like Janet said.
Yeah, we'll be in round two with Moderna, the community piece. So then all of our sites are like you guys, we're certified to do the vaccine, like to give the vaccines, but we'll, because we don't have the refrigerators and like, we'll be in round two. But this is going to be an exciting time, and but it's actually something to look forward to as opposed to just feel like you're idling in place.
Yeah. There was a survey that just came out this week from Elon that had one kind of headline-grabbing negative number and then the more kind of positive number underneath it, which is that only 40%, I think, of North Carolinians said they were comfortable taking the vaccine right now. That's the headline grabber. And then underneath it is about two-thirds of North Carolinians are just mostly waiting for that first round to come and for people to get it and make sure that everything's okay. And then fingers crossed we're going to see that 40% number go significantly up. But what are we doing now? What are you doing to get the word out about this is coming, it's happening now, it's safe, we've got all of this information that everyone can feel comfortable and safe coming out and getting this?
So we're about, actually today I think we launched a campaign entitled It's Our Shot, and really encouraging everyone that this is our one shot to try to get beyond this pandemic, and tremendous amount of education. I spend a good deal of my time every day just walking through the halls of the hospital, and lately my conversations have been asking what folks think about the vaccine, and all right, do you think you're going to get it, what questions do you have? And although not scientific, it's been insightful. I think, as you said, Aaron, many are waiting. I think I'm hopeful they will, but they just want maybe, you know, a few thousand to go before them and see what happens. And so I think a lot of those naysayers are going to change their minds.
Yeah, we agree. We totally agree.
Speaking with, again, Brian Toomey, Janet Hadar, Raul Daniels, we've been talking about healthcare and health and wellness in the context of COVID-19. What other significant health impacts are coming out of this? One of the things that we've been hearing throughout the year is that sort of other negative health indicators are on the rise because people are skipping regular checkups and annual physicals and things like that. What are the other non-COVID things that are worrying you right now?
Yeah, I think initially, and we saw this initially, and I think this continues to be a challenge, is just individuals being fearful of coming into the healthcare environment, which only delays their own care. I would say that working at UNC Hospitals is one of the safest places in the world.
Yeah,
and the way I feel that way is because we are all playing by the same rules. We're all wearing eye protection. We're all wearing masks. You can be assured that if you come into one of our care environments, you're going to be in a very clean, safe environment. I feel more comfortable going to the hospital than I do going out to the general community at times. And I think the delay of care has been one of the biggest challenges for us. And hopefully, as vaccines and other things come out, people will be more willing to reapproach their health care.
Yeah, Janet?
We're dependent on a lot of other healthcare providers across the state, nursing homes, rehab facilities, home health agencies. And, one of the challenges we're having right now is many of the nursing homes in the community, when they have an outbreak, they will close to admissions. And so it creates a bottleneck in the acute care environment because we have individuals that really need those services. And so, you know, trying to balance that and think creatively about how we can, you know, provide services in an alternative format, even to the point of, maybe we can do more than we historically have done in the home. So a lot of creativity, and I think the innovation coming out of this pandemic, much of it will stick. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, Brian?
Yeah, amen to all the above. In addition to that, I think what we realize is PTSD is post-traumatic stress. you can't have the postpartum until you pass the trauma. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're trying to, we see people managing their stress levels now, but the long-term effects of what we're looking at. We don't see kids getting their vaccines to the level that they used to, certainly with us, and we think that'll have some effect. For seniors, there is a reason why there's physical therapy and occupational therapy, because therapy makes sure you don't rust up. And so we see people more and more getting rust and then not moving so much, and we're afraid that lack of movement is going to have some long-term effects, mm-hmm. especially with some of our seniors.
We're getting on to the end of the half hour, and so we'll have to wrap up this conversation. But as we do, final thoughts from all three of you heading into 2021, not just what you're optimistic about, but what's the message for individuals right now? What should people be thinking? What should people be doing? What should people have in mind as we hopefully get out of this and into something post-COVID in the semi-near future, Brian?
So think about where you are today, pre-Christmas 2020, and then when pre-Christmas 2021, just remember what it was like now. And you're going to see some tremendous positive changes between now and then. And then understand that what you have, and don't lose it again. Mm-hmm. And be careful. Just be careful. But we're going to see some good things. Just know it's coming.
Janet?
Yeah, we're in an industry that brings tremendous perspective. And seeing and witnessing what we've observed over the last 10, 11 months has, it's just tremendous perspective. And you really, the phrase of don't sweat the small stuff really is meaningful. And I would just ask the community really not to become apathetic to this continued tragedy. We can't become apathetic. We've just got to stay the course, wear the masks, please wear the masks. And they work, and we'll get through it.
Yeah, we're all fine.
Yeah, I don't know that I've got anything stronger to share than what Janet just shared, but I will say to the community, thank you for all the kindness that you've shown our coworkers, the hospital. There have been a lot of tremendous help and support from our local community members, bringing food into our staff, providing masks to the hospital early on when the pandemic was just getting started. So many wonderful, wonderful thoughts from the community. So my best wishes to everybody in the community going forward.
And we've had a lot of heavy conversations this week. So the fact that we're bringing the healthcare people and you are optimistic about 2021 really makes me feel good as well. Because once your optimism spreads out into the rest of the community, I think 2021 hopefully will be a lot better than 2020 was for sure. Well, again, thanks to Brian Toomey, Janet Hadar, Raul Daniels, Piedmont Health, UNC Health, UNC Hospitals. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We are not done with this hour, however. Coming up in the second half hour, we'll be talking about mental health specifically, as we've already mentioned the importance of that and the impact of COVID on mental health. In this half hour, we'll focus specifically on that as our conversation on health and wellness continues in the Forum on the Hill. Back with more after this.
Stay tuned for more community conversations with the Forum on the Hill, sponsored by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. Only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.
At UNC Health, we're experts in primary care and caring. Our specialists don't just see a condition. We see you, the whole you, mind and body. Because when we know you better, we're better at getting you well and keeping you well. And with more experts in each office, same-day appointments, and more urgent care centers, it's no wonder it's the better way of primary caring. Find the right provider for you and your family at uncprimarycare.org.
Hi, I'm Katie Murray, Director of the Orange County Arts Commission. North Carolina is often called the writingest state, and I think Orange County is the writingest county. Here's acclaimed author and UNC faculty member, Daniel Wallace.
I'm Daniel Wallace. I'm proud to be part of a community that nurtures the literary arts and enjoy playing a part in the Piedmont Laureate Program.
The arts industry has been decimated by the pandemic. The future character and vibrancy of our community relies on our support of this critical industry. Donate to the Orange County Arts Support Fund today at artsorange.org/support. Fund.
I'm Aubrey Williams, General Manager of 97.9 The Hill, where we are gearing up for a new year and some fresh and compelling programming.
January 4th, set your morning alarm and tune in for something new and great.
Hey, it's Aaron Kank, and I'm really excited to start waking up with you every weekday morning from 6 to 9 for This Morning with Aaron Kank. Join me and Victor Lewis as we get you going with local news and sports, great music, fun conversations, informative topics, and everything else you need to start your day right here on The Hill.
And for your afternoon drive, catch up on all the latest from our news team.
Join me, News Director Brighton McConnell, later in the day. Learn about daily headlines and developing stories from around our community during News on the Hill with Brighton McConnell. We'll have traffic and weather updates, interviews, music, and much more to keep you informed. Live from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. every weekday.
Bringing you local news and information on the air and online. 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. Proud to be your hometown radio station.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Lori Policelli with the Chapel Hill Orange County Visitor Bureau. The holidays might look a little different this year with masks and social distancing, but the spirit of giving and love is alive and well in Orange County. Remember to support your friends and neighbors who own retail shops in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Hillsboro. Your gift to your loved ones will also be a gift to one of our hardworking local businesses. Let's all get out and give back this season.
Welcome back to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill. Presented by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. Hear the full conversation and catch anything you miss at chapelboro.com/forumonthehill.
And welcome back to the Forum on the Hill. Aaron Keck here with you at 97.9 The Hill Studios. We are talking this hour about health and wellness. And for the first half hour, we had the conversation focusing primarily on physical health, the immediate impact of COVID-19, and obviously all the news that we are getting now about the vaccine. But that is really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the health and wellness impact of COVID. And one of the things that sometimes does and sometimes doesn't fly under the radar, but an almost, if not even more, significant impact short and long term of this pandemic has been the impact on mental health. So we're going to talk about that in this half hour specifically. And we're joined in the studio by two special guests. Dr. Christina Cruz is a psychiatrist and a professor at UNC. Dr. Mary Kimmel is the medical director at UNC's Perinatal Psychiatry Inpatient Unit. Dr. Cruz, Dr. Kimmel, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So when it comes to COVID, and just kind of throwing out the general question, what are you seeing in terms of the impacts that it's having? And I'm sure they're widespread and disparate, but what are the impacts that you're seeing on mental health?
I think they're it's pretty far reaching. I would say kids, I'm a child psychiatrist, mm-hmm. but also see adults. Folks who were struggling before are struggling more now, and folks who were borderline struggling are now really struggling, and anyone who is not struggling is now borderline struggling. So I think it's kind of pushed everyone towards a level that's been hard for everyone, because this is just affecting all of us in most facets of our lives.
Yeah. Brian Toomey in the last half hour said that whatever we were heading into this, we're now in that much more of that now. Is that kind of what you're seeing too?
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say, as someone who works in the hospital, we see more and more folks coming in with clinical level struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mary?
And I work with pregnant women and postpartum women. And so many of the women already, you know, are going through all these changes, trying to kind of figure out, you know, even just the logistics of, you know, getting to labor and delivery and those kinds of things. And you add in COVID and the pandemic, and that's made that those even kind of basic things even more complicated. But then there's certainly the worry about their health, the worry about their baby's health, and the worry about their family. You know, will their mother be able to, you know, see the baby? And so Exactly. We're seeing that we have such higher rates of anxiety. And I think some of that was there already. And now maybe fortunately we're able to talk about it more. But we're seeing much higher rates of anxiety and stress.
What's the long-term impact of that?
I think it's hard to fully know. You know, it depends on, one, how long it's been going on for, two, mm-hmm. how long it's going to go on for, and then three, levels of resilience, which both are internal and environmental. And so I think for folks who are resilient, which we know most people are, it's going to take some getting used to not being in a pandemic after, but I suspect most people are going to be okay. There are going to be a good chunk of folks, though, for which this really does change trajectories. For example, we are unfortunately seeing higher rates of abuse coming in and more kind of intractable symptoms, I'll call them, just because folks either aren't able to get care or the stress is so bad it's driving them to be just sicker. And mm-hmm. so I think I'm hopeful that most people will bounce back. But it's going to take time. I think just like it took time for us to get used to the pandemic, it'll take time for us to get used to not wearing masks, for mm-hmm. example, and it's going to take a step-by-step process.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have kind of two different long-term effects. You know, we're increasingly, and I think, you know, at UNC, there's so much amazing research going on in understanding it, but we know that fatigue is an after effect for many people who've had COVID. And so that impact sort of, you know, we're beginning to understand what that may look like for people. And I think, you know, when you look at the immune system and the complexity, for example, in pregnancy, it's, you know, even more complicated. And so just thinking about those pieces and making sure that we have support and that we continue to have that great research. But then I think a lot of what Dr. Cruz was saying, that we also have, you know, these critical transition points and all these hopes that we have for them, and just kind of having to process that going forward. And I think that we can really support people process that and we can create resilience, but we have to make sure we're giving that support to create that resilience.
Is there a referent for the thing that we're all going through right now? Like trying to understand and make sense of something, you look back to previous experience, even if it's just something that societies have dealt with in the past. What's the referent for this? What do you look back to?
I look more towards like disaster literature. It's not quite the same, obviously, but mm-hmm. you know, the largest widespread pandemic, at least in the U.S., was back in 1918. So mm-hmm. we don't really have as much knowledge from there. Certainly, there's been Ebola recently and such, but it's taken a different course. So if you look more towards disaster literature, which is what we have here in the U.S., that's what you see as a referent. At least I do. And you can, what I've been trying to think about with using that is to lengthen the timeline to think, what do you think about a disaster that goes on for a year or two, and how mm-hmm. do you adjust what we know now from what we know then.
Mm-hmm. How does that help you?
Well, it kind of helps me predict a course, right? So like this sense of resiliency, that comes from knowing after disasters that resiliency comes back. It can take a while, right? So literature from Hurricane Katrina, for example, shows for at least kids with mental health issues and then kids who just experienced the disaster but don't have mental health issues pre-Katrina, PTSD type symptoms, post-traumatic stress disorder, could be seen 3 years out. And mm-hmm. that's way beyond when you would expect something, but it happens because of a disaster. I'd say probably now, what's it been, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
They're probably back to relative normal. But so that's how I think about using that literature, is to be able to map out what I expect.
Mary?
Yeah, and actually, interestingly, my mom sent me a letter that was about a relative who was a physician during the 1918 flu. And it's interesting to see that there was this ability, like how much it impacted the patients that he was working with, and yet also to see kind of his life course and to see how they were able to you know, you think about then the resilience that we see across people. And so I think that is one of the good things about looking at that, but also the recognition that it was a, he even said, you know, some of the people that he saw dealing with the flu were, you know, almost that was even harder than some of the patients that he had dealt with who had been to war. And so I think, you know, just recognizing the difficulties that individuals may face and really providing them support.
I've heard it said a number of times, and it got brought up again earlier in the forum today, that we're all in different boats, but we're all in the same storm, or vice versa, depending on what you want to emphasize. What is the impact of us all being in the same storm? Like, how does that make it easier for people to process? How does that make it harder for people to process?
I actually think that is one of the things about this that I have been heartened by, is being able to see that people can talk more about feeling stress, and that mental health and mental wellness are key components of our lives, and that, you know, making space to do the things like to connect with other people, to, you know, to get outside, you know, that it's really reminding us that we need to do these things, and that that we all need to be supporting one another and doing these things together.
Yeah, Christina?
Yeah, I would second that. And I'd say that as background, I do a lot of research in India. And so there, similarly, I think where mental health might be even more highly stigmatized, it's become very central to the conversation. And I think that's one of the silver linings, is that we can start to talk about it and it becomes a bit less stigmatized. I'm not going to say destigmatized just yet, but it becomes part of the conversation, the mental health piece, in addition to any other stressors happening, such as food insecurity, home insecurity. All of this stuff now gets to be talked about in a way, because everyone in a way can understand it.
And I guess that includes this panel too, right? Because if we had, and we've done community forums in previous years, and I think this is the first time we've ever had a panel specifically devoted to not just health, but mental health. And it's because we're all going through it, right? Like, we're all much more aware of it now than we were before. And I think we were talking, I'm going to bring this up again in this conversation, talking about racial disparities, but we're getting up to the level that we should have been at the whole time, right, when it comes to awareness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If not, we can still go further, I think, mm-hmm. but we're getting there.
Yeah, getting a little bit closer.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking with Dr. Christina Cruz and Dr. Mary Kimmel, talking about mental health and in the larger context of health and wellness. And you mentioned earlier, Christina, that the increasing rates of abuse, and that we're experiencing that, and you're dealing with this in your work. This is something that I had seen reports about people anticipating that we might be seeing that number increase right at the very beginning of the pandemic. So that's something that, as heavy as it is something that we did anticipate, at least to an extent. What didn't we anticipate? What have we experienced that we maybe didn't see coming?
This is all anecdotal, because mm-hmm. I think literature is still coming out, but I think I didn't expect the severity to be worse. So I didn't expect, when seeing folks suffering during the COVID pandemic with regards to mental health, how much worse it could get for folks. I didn't think it could go there, but it did. And I think it's been striking as the months have gone on, and now we're approaching a peak with this, the infections, to kind of see more and more folks getting to that depth. And so to me, it's a bit scary to see, and makes me more vigilant when I hear folks say in the community or outside of the hospital, like, that they're having a hard time, to really check in, because mm-hmm. in the hospital, you get to see kind of what has to be hospitalized, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, some of it was that we, just how many, and we all knew how many resources we needed, but it really highlighted how many even more we needed. And I'm grateful for the services we have. Like, we have the specialized perinatal psychiatry inpatient unit. And actually, I'm the director of the perinatal over the program, but for 5 years I was the director of that unit, and now Dr. Patterson is. And on that unit, you know, we had to close that down for a while because we, you know, were trying to navigate all of this. But I also, from that, was worried about the women that weren't getting care, and then seeing that we could make changes and we could get them in, and that we are back to, you know, getting women that care even during this time, even with the challenges. So I think there were some unexpected things, but also unexpected in a good way, that we could figure out and problem solve.
Think about the disparities in who is most impacted by this and who is most and least able to actually reach out and get help, whether it's professional help or just community help or social help. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think it's widespread, and whoever has been disadvantaged, I think, is disproportionately disadvantaged.
Everything a little bit more than it already was.
Yeah, I'd say that it's just clear, like, crises make disparities wider and clearer, and that's absolutely happening right now. I think, unfortunately, the nature of this is such that you don't even know how wide it is. And so with things like schools not being in session, we have less of a reach into kids. With like fewer folks being in the office, we have less of a reach for folks working. So I think it's just absolutely affected, and I don't know how big the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And we see, I mean, one thing that's been interesting is to see how much telehealth has taken off. And in for a lot of pregnant and postpartum women, that is an amazing resource for them. I think it gets women to be able to connect that wouldn't have been able to. I mean, we're getting rid of some of the barriers for some women, but then we know that this is also creating in some ways greater disparity, particularly for patients that don't have good internet access, patients in rural communities that may not have as good of internet access. And so don't have access to the phones with good internet access. And so that is also creating a disparity. And so just being really thinking through that and trying to be creative about how can we make sure we're meeting the needs of all patients.
How much of your work is COVID related right now? I mean, it's 2020, it's the end, we're doing this forum on lessons learned from 2020. And obviously you turned to COVID first, but people are going through the same things that they went through a year ago as well, and now we've got COVID added on top of this. So how much of your work deals with that directly and indirectly, and how much of your work does not? Like, what else is happening?
I'll say for my work, I'm part clinical, part research, and so in a way, it's 100% COVID. In that, yes, everything was happening before, but now, as we were saying, we're all on that same boat. And so the patients I see, all of the history includes social isolation. All of the history includes not being able to access things when we need it. My research has had to shift tremendously because of COVID. So in a way, it's 100%. But there's also this oddly, like, 100% the other way, where it's kind of the same thing still. So it's this weird, like, ambivalent place that I think I feel like I live in, where you see it at the same time and not. I remember first time walking back onto the psychiatry unit during COVID and, you know, being anxious and getting ready, and I was all gowned up and ready to go, and then, like, the unit looked exactly the same. It was just this bizarre experience, but I knew that there could be something microscopic that was a problem. So I was both doing my old job, but with this, like, new lens.
And similarly for me, I think there's been the two aspects. One, in terms of patient care. So, I mean, every patient, it gives me the ability to say, oh, are your kids, are they virtual? Are they, what's happening with that? And how are you guys navigating that? I mean, so bringing those pieces in, and it is impacting everyone in different ways. And it's been really great to be able to talk with people about it and to hear how they're navigating that and to try to support them in that. And then in terms of my research is actually in bacteria in the gut. So I thought a lot about microbes and how they impact us. And so this has certainly, I think, added to that sort of thinking about our immune systems, thinking about how we navigate these things, how can we support our immune systems.
What is your research?
It's,
both of you have mentioned it, but I want to know more.
So I study the gut bacteria as it relates to depression and anxiety during pregnancy and postpartum.
Christina?
And I created a system in India where I've taught teachers how to deliver mental health care to their students where there's not care, so in the Himalayas. And so I think a lot about how to get folks services where none exist.
Oh, that's really cool. What impacts have you seen from that?
In terms of, like, COVID?
Anything, yeah. Or just anything.
Yeah, so I think, like, everything in India in the research is magnified in that, from what I'm seeing here. So I think the biggest one that's notable is just the tech divide and the disparity. And so when schools had to close in Darjeeling, which is where I work, virtual couldn't really happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there just had to be actually an uptick of virtual and creativity around even how to get papers around to villages, because the mail shut down, the jeeps shut down, and we're talking about, you know, 1 mile, I don't know, 20 feet up and down the mountain, not paved, like this is the, and so you have to be able to be creative in that situation. So that was really clear as well. What was interesting though is the teachers were just as motivated here as there in terms of reaching out. And I perhaps that's not a surprise, but it was also really hopeful given just how much more adversity there seemed to be there as well. Mm-hmm.
2020 has been a big year for a lot of reasons. COVID, obviously, number one. We've got a racial justice movement that struck in the summer, but is still very much ongoing and is again raising awareness up to closer to the point where it should have been all along. We've had an election. We've had a census. We've had 1,000 other things. Mm-hmm. What do you know now that you didn't at the beginning of the year?
That's a hard question.
I'm sorry for asking all these big questions. I'm just fascinated to see where people are taking them.
I think for me, that we can get people to understand mental health is all of us, and that mental wellness is important for all of us, and that we can make that a priority, and that can be a larger discussion. I had hoped that, but I think I have really seen over the last year that actually is playing out.
Mm. Is your work easier or harder now?
Oh, I think it's there are still a lot, many, many challenges.
Yeah.
challenges with, you know, in some ways, yes, I actually think in some ways now, you know, which is a wonderful thing and will be so much better for everyone as we all realize that mental health is all of us and that we all need supports at different times. But then there is the challenge of you know, needing to figure out sometimes very creative ways to get people support with the resources we have, and also to think towards the future of what resources do we need, because there's a lot of need.
Yeah, and I'll add to that I think it's similar to how we can think about all of the unrest that happened this year with regards to race, which is, I'm really glad we're talking about it, but there's actually, it means there's even more work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's both this like big picture, really excited, and then this day-to-day, like gosh, inundated with so many things. But I think with like a good plan in place and just kind of moving forward, it's motivating to know that we're going places.
Speaking again with Dr. Christina Cruz, Dr. Mary Kimmel, talking about mental health and wellness writ large. And as we start to get to the end of the hour, what are the lessons not for you, not for people who work in the health profession and in mental health, but what are the lessons that just individuals should take with them? What should we keep in mind? How should we act differently, or how should we be acting the same as we were before?
I think there's a part of it where being attuned to yourself is going to be really important, because I think it's been mentioned on this forum and just everywhere, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to take a lot of knowing how you're doing, what your stressors are, and how you're going to react. In addition to just kind of knowing that everyone's a little more on edge, so it's going to be a bit easier to become angry or upset. And so knowing how you react and who you are, I think will get you quite far, in addition to a bit of kindness to your neighbor who will be undergoing similar things, if not the same.
Yeah.
And I think along with that, kindness to yourself in this process, and to recognize that, you know, we feel stressed. It's not a flaw on your part for feeling stressed. It's not a character issue. And also, if you are going through medical depression or anxiety, to please reach out and get support, because these are, we have complex systems that help us navigate stress, and they're amazing systems, but you know, we sometimes our systems over excel, as I like to tell people. And so they need, you know, we need support. And so to be kind to yourself when you need support.
What are some good resources that people should know about?
So definitely calling, so for pregnant women, actually, we have a program called North Carolina Maternal Mental Health Matters, and we actually have a phone line that that providers can call for their patients. So the provider can call and we can, perinatal psychiatrists such as myself, give support and help figure out a plan for with the patient and with the provider.
And Christina, last word.
Yeah, I'd say I always end up directing folks to start with NAMI. They have wonderful programs and groups, and it's a whole system support, not just the person who's having struggles, but also the family to get involved, and then reach out to your friends or someone you know who can help, because I think it starts there with a community. It's your neighbor who's going to get you started, or your best friend. And then the hope is to get you the professional help if that's where you need to go. But I think to be in isolation is going to be the most troubling thing.
And that concludes our segment on mental health and our hour on health and wellness. Dr. Christina Cruz, Dr. Mary Kimmel, thanks to both of you so much for being with us today and for all you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
If you want more and to listen back to all of our previous hours, head to our website, chapelboro.com, and get more. We've got more of the forum coming tomorrow as we wrap things up. Two more hours of the 10-hour forum. We'll be talking about housing in our community and then wrapping up with public safety and social justice, all of that tomorrow here on the Hill. That's going to do it for me. I will turn it over now to Tar Heel women's basketball, taking on Wake Forest in 50 seconds.
Thanks for listening to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill, presented by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. Join us tomorrow at 4 p.m. to hear more discussions by local leaders on community-wide issues. See the full schedule of forum topics by day and catch up on anything you missed at chapelboro.com/forumonthehill.